I'd like to call the Energy Policy Committee to order. We're going to start with Xcel's Solar Rewards Program and the Made in Minnesota bonus program. Because our bill author is not here, so if you're ready to go, we'll... Mr. Gabler, thank you for coming to the committee and welcome on especially such short notice. I think you know solar has been a hot topic in front of this committee, and we have a bill that's moving through the process on solar, and so we are anxious to hear about the programs that have been going in the state so far and what the track record has been and what we might be able to learn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the opportunity to come down to talk about our solar awards program. So to get started, solar awards is a voluntary program, and it is administered by Xcel Energy. It was first launched in 2010. From a program qualification standpoint, it covers both residential and commercial customers. We have 20-year contracts requirements with our customers, and as part of that, we purchase the REC, or the renewable energy credit, is assigned to Xcel Energy. From a system size standpoint, systems generally they run between 0.5 kW up to 40 kW. From a funding standpoint, Solar Awards was really designed to offset the cost of a PV installation. We have it in 2010, 11, and 12. We had a $5 million budget per year, and that was funded out of our conservation improvement programs. For those 3 years in 2010 through 2012, the rebate paid was at $2.25 a watt. We had just had approved a new conservation improvement program running from 2013 through 2015, and beginning in 13, the rebate per watt will drop down to $1.50. So what I wanted to provide is a very generic example, and I believe this example here may be slightly different than the ones that you have in your handouts. But the average residential system being installed today is about 5.5 kW. At a $6 per watt system size, that's $33,000. In 2013, we would provide a rebate on that system of $8,250. The federal tax credit, and I think that's where might be a discrepancy, the federal tax credit would be 30% of the out-of-pocket of the customer, so $7,425. So between the solar awards rebate and the federal tax credit, basically 48% of that system is paid for.
Can you walk through those numbers one more time since they weren't exactly the ones on our sheet?
Sure.
Thank you.
So the per watt cost is $6.
Okay.
The total system cost would be $33,000. The solar awards incentive is the $8,250, so that's the 5,500 watts times $1.50. The federal tax credit is based upon the customer's out-of-pocket, so the $33,000 less the solar awards incentive of $8,250, 30% of that is the $7,425. And the 48% represents the $8,250 and 7425 divided by the 33,000. We good?
We're good.
Okay, great. So from a historical standpoint, how did solar awards perform? You can see we've laid out a chart here of the number of megawatts installed, the number of systems installed, and the customer incentives over the 3 years of the triennial that we just completed in 2012. The spending was really, it wasn't levelized at $5 million a year, even though that's how the budget was laid out. We had the program launched, and I think our first rebate was paid in May of 2010. And, you know, projects get on certain cycles. They're not going to complete in the year that you believe they're going to complete in. But based upon the pipeline, our commitment as a company was that we were going to spend the full $15 million over that three-year period. And in conjunction with Solar Awards is the Minnesota Made Bonus. It is funded through the Renewable Development Fund. And the qualifications are that the system must be manufactured in Minnesota and there's a certified installation required. So the incentive tied to the Minnesota bonus, it's an upfront incentive, but it's payable over 5 years. And there's a cap on the Minnesota bonus at $5 per watt and up to 60% of the incremental cost, or 60% of the project cost. So if we look at a project this year, they could receive $1.50 from Solar Awards, and additional up to $3.50 per watt if they're purchasing panels made in the state of Minnesota. And this program as well is administered by Xcel. And from an installed cost standpoint in the current market, generally the systems that were installed over the past 3 years have fallen into the $5 to $6.50 per watt. If we compare that to our program in Colorado, which is a more mature program, much more megawatts installed, the price per watt there is about $4. If we look at projects that have come into our pipeline via that were receiving Solar Awards and a Minnesota bonus rebate or incentive, generally those installed costs were about $8 per watt. So that's a blended cost based upon both of the manufacturers in the state of Minnesota. Oops. You know, when we look at solar programs, when we talk about what's the future of the solar programs, we do have Solar Awards as part of our triennial right now. One of the funding concerns from Xcel Energy standpoint is that SIP is the funding source. And SIP has a three-year budget cycle. So that budget cycle kind of locks us into how we're funding that with upfront incentives today. We're really advocates of having a transparent incentive. One example that has been advocated for is the buy all sell all model. That way the utility is purchasing all of the power produced from that system and we sell all the power to the customer. The performance-based incentive in this scenario is really built into our buy rate. And we believe it's one of the most transparent rate structures. And it fairly distributes all the costs and benefits to the ratepayers. You know, that's a model very different from how we're funding today. And it really kind of, again, levels the playing field for those customers who are installing solar versus those non-participants in the programs. So a very brief update. I'm open for any questions.
Thank you very much. We have two so far. Representative Beard.
Back on slide number five, can you give us, Mr. Gabler, just refresh my memory on what the manufactured in Minnesota means? Because I know quite a few of these panels, large components, are made elsewhere.
Correct.
And assembled here. Have we established a standard that you're required to work with, or have you built a standard yourself on slide number five?
Mr. Gabler.
Thank you. According to the legislation, there is a definition that we follow for manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And manufactured means, I will read it verbatim, the material production of solar photovoltaic modules, including the tabbing, stringing, and lamination process, or the production of interconnections of low voltage photoactive elements that produce the final useful photovoltaic output by a manufacturer operating in the state as of May 18th, 2010. So,
yes.
We follow that definition for who is included as a Minnesota manufacturer.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. And then and appreciate that, Mr. Gabriel. On slide number six, next one. To what do you attribute the difference in installed cost between the Colorado program and the Minnesota program?
Mr. Gabler.
$2 in $2.50 in some cases. Any idea why one is more expensive than the other?
Specifically, I think we can look to areas such as the maturity of the market. Mm-hmm. Solar's been installed. We've had a program in Colorado running since 2006, 2007. I think it's a more mature marketplace. So from a permitting, installation, the number of installers located in the state are all bringing the cost down.
Representative Beard.
Thanks.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Multitasking, I apologize. To the testifier or to staff, the Made in Minnesota bonus, we see on slide 4 the total cost of the solar rewards program, the incentive program throughout the year. Do we have the cumulative Made in Minnesota support amounts or incentives?
Mr. Gabler.
So the Made in Minnesota, funded through the RDF, I have the numbers for you. I don't have the exact numbers. It was $2 million in 2010, $4 million, I believe, in 2011, and then $5 million in 2012 or 13, 14, and 15.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. So it's $5 million in 12, 13, and 14. I was for my notes. This is my energy notebook that I study from, so I just want to make sure if it doesn't go in there, I might get lost. So 2012, 13, and 14 were $5 million each. Correct? And then could you repeat?
13, 14, and 15 are $5 million each.
Okay. And what was 12?
4.
Okay.
And 2.
Okay. So, and Madam Chair?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. So, if the Made in just looking at the Made in Minnesota program and the Solar Rewards program, I mean, we could, you know, theoretically, if people were looking at just doing solar installations, you could have a 60% increase in the amount of solar installations just by rolling that program into the Made in Minnesota program into the Solar Rewards program.
Mr. Gabler.
That money was allocated to that.
I haven't done the math.
Okay, so Representative Garofalo, you want to walk through your thinking there?
Well, no, I'm just saying we have an incentive program right now, which is, I mean, depending upon how it's structured, I understand Excel has changed it. But, you know, there's an incentive program. It's of customer incentives and systems mm-hmm. being installed. And if we take the Made in Minnesota program and just took those funds out of, instead of having it go from the RDF to Made in Minnesota, took those funds and put them into the Solar Rewards program, you could expand the size and scope of it. One of the things we've heard from testimony is that the people are applying for this stuff when the windows open up. You know, as soon as the window opens up, everyone applies for it. It gets full right away. There's a waiting list. People want it. And that would expand eligibility without doing the Made in Minnesota program, if people are so inclined to do it. Just something to consider.
Mr. Gabler, could you talk a little bit about the process by which people access these benefits and how long that window really is open and how long it takes for people to fully sign up for it?
Sure. So I think the comment is correct. Right now we've had a pipeline of projects that has been building, waiting for the new program to open. And we're seeing that. So we opened up our program on March 11th for 2013. We received over 400 applications that we're currently going through the process of evaluating. And we'll award rebates based upon how those projects came into the pipeline. That's a little bit of a new, well, I shouldn't say new phenomenon. However, we experienced it in 2011 and 12, and I think one of the drivers of that was we had a very healthy rebate. At $2.25 a watt, that was bringing people into the program. At $1.50 a watt, that is going to start to create some different economies as well, depending upon what happens with the install costs. And we'll have to look again as to in 2014, potentially, if Solar Awards continues to be the solar program offered by Xcel Energy, what will be the rebate in 2014? Because we know that panel costs continue to decline nationwide. So from a process standpoint, we're dealing with a backlog, a pent-up demand, and that demand exists even at $1.50 a watt.
So, Mr. Gabler, with those 400 applications, is that application window still open, so if Representative Garofalo decided today that he wanted to apply for the Solar Rewards Program and he submitted his application, would he still be eligible for consideration, or is there some sort of a cap that's been reached?
Madam Chair, let me interrupt you and answer that question. The correct answer would be no, I could not apply for it because I live in the Dakota Electric Territory, not in the Xcel Territory.
So there are no solar rewards available for Representative Garofalo. Is that right? At this point in time?
Are you asking me or
anybody who wants to answer it?
Well, I mean, not through Xcel Energy.
Yeah, Madam Chair, not through Xcel Energy. I mean, there is the 30% federal tax credit. Actually, a good question to know is that does the Made in Minnesota bonus, does that apply to just Xcel ratepayers or is that statewide?
Mr. Gabler?
That applies just to Xcel ratepayers.
So with regard to the, okay, say Representative Melissa Hortman wanted to add solar panels to her house and submitted an application on March 19th. Is there still room to apply, or are you tapped out, or is 400 all you're taking?
We will still accept the application because each application then has to go through a review process, including an engineering review process. So the funds, all of the funds have not been allocated. We'll begin allocating and awarding what we call acknowledgement letters to customers within the next week or so, once it gets through that initial design. And also their funds, I should say, will open up because projects, while they may come into the queue, may never get completed. And we saw that in hence the reason of spending $8.7 million in 2012.
And could I ask, because I didn't follow this closely in previous legislative sessions, how it is that Xcel came to be the home of the Made in Minnesota program? Mr. Gabler?
I don't think I'm the right person to answer that.
Okay. All right, well, Representative Falk has a comment
on that.
Thank
you, Madam Chair. I would think the probably most honest answer would be thank you, Representative Rukavina, and your legislative prowess.
Mm-hmm. Representative Falk, I would just think that Representative Rukavina would have wanted this available in the community he served. So, I mean, I appreciate that he made it available in my community, but...
No, Madam Chair. What he wanted was he wanted the money to go to the community that he serves, and that's where the money ends up eventually. That's why I suspect he wanted.
So, Mr. Gabler, could you speak a little bit to the... I understand that Xcel proposed to end solar rewards as it's currently constructed earlier in the year, maybe last year, and... if you could just speak to some of the rationale for why the decision was made to maybe move in a different direction. I know that hasn't happened, mm-hmm. pending approval from Department of Commerce, but just some of the thinking what I think would be helpful to the committee to understand.
You know, we had voluntary offered solar awards as part of our 2010 triennial plan, and we wanted to see how could we move or support the solar marketplace over that three-year time frame. We put certain goals and commitments out there that we felt that we had achieved. I think someone had commented that there continues to be a federal tax credit equal to 30% available to all customers. And we just didn't believe that our CIP program, the Conservation Improvement Program, was the right program and the right funding source for solar going forward. Those are the major drivers.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm thinking about the payback, Mr. Gabler, and why someone would do this. And listening to the chair's construction of who would be eligible and who wouldn't, if I've still got a $33,000 investment, I'm getting about half of it back from other ratepayers. So I got about $16,000 of my own money in this deal. I know what my electric bill is every month. And even if I eliminated it, I'm looking at 10 or 12 years for a payback on this thing, the maintenance and degradation of the system notwithstanding. Do you, when you're looking at assessing these, do you look at payback periods and what makes economic sense, or is it just, will the roof hold up and can they have that financial wherewithal to actually complete the project?
Mr. Gabler.
We leave it up to the customer to make that decision and determination on paybacks. I think your math is fairly accurate. It is in that 10-year, 11-year, 12-year, all depending upon the system costs. And one comment I would make is that the numbers that I presented here were not inclusive of Minnesota bonus rebate. That was just a straight solar awards plus a federal tax credit. So you may have a little bit higher system cost, or may, a little bit lower amount of system costs out of pocket when solar, when the Minnesota Made comes into play. I know the very first customer that we awarded a solar awards incentive check to, and there was a state bonus, or I think a state incentive at that time, and he knew it was a 9-year payback.
Representative Beard.
One last question then. I've noted we've seen in some proposed legislation a mandate for a 20-year contract. How long are you required to send checks and so on to the, or to buy the power from the people who engage in this program?
Mr. Gabler.
We have a 20-year contract as well.
So if I go out of business then, Madam Chair, do we still have a deal, or is it, can I break the contract as
Mr.
the
Gabler.
Rooftop guy?
There are those situations, and we've just dealt with that. If a customer goes out of business, most likely, depending upon where we are in the contract, the decision will have to be made as to is there a clawback. And I think under the last tariff that we had before the commission and the contract, there is not that clawback provision.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Anybody from the public want to add any commentary on the Made in Minnesota program or solar rewards, or anybody from the Department of Commerce who wanted to speak to the... Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Gabler.
Thanks.
Our next item on the agenda is House File 655, and I'll note for the record that a quorum is present. I will move that House File 655 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. Representative Howe, thank you for abiding by first term of rules.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And,
welcome to the Energy Committee.
Thank you. You're actually the benefit of this is actually, and I'm not quite sure on the rule of the first time a rule, if it's the first time in the committee or the first time a bill, your first bill is heard. So
I think we'll construe it liberally.
In any case, being that I've had two other bills heard, this is the first time I've provided treats because, so in any case, you're the, you get the benefit of my lax adherence to the rule in previous cases.
Great. Tell us why House File 655 is such a great bill.
Well, Madam Chair, the reason it's such a great bill is that it actually is hopefully going to get more people involved in the process when the routes are proposed. Currently, what happens is there's a preferred route, and when notices go out, kind of indicates what is a if you're on the preferred route or on an alternate route or on any other route. And what happens is most folks get a little bit of apathy if they're not on the preferred route because everyone anticipates it to go on the preferred route. And what we've seen happen is when it doesn't go on the preferred route and a lot of people show up, it ends up on that alternate route, and then it's too late many times to do a whole lot about it. So this just treats everyone equal. Everyone knows they're on the same playing field. When that notice comes out, it treats them all that it's just a route.
Thank you, Representative Howe. Do you have any testifiers to speak to your bill?
No.
Okay. Would anybody from the public like to speak in favor of or opposed to or about the impact of House File 655?
If you'd like, Madam Chair, I do have an email from one of my constituents on the bill, if you'd like me to read that.
Feel free, or you could pass it out. If you, it doesn't. Any questions from members on your bill? We have an amendment. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move adoption of the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment is essentially Representative Bly's by the farm language. This is an appropriate pace for this to be affixed to. I think it deals with a lot of the same concerns people have when pressed with a potential line coming through their property, and would ask for member support.
Discussion to the Falk Amendment. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you discussed this with the bill's author, Representative Falk?
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, he asked me to offer it.
I... Representative Falk, I think she meant the bill author in the room, not the author of the bill that is contained in the amendment.
Wise bill. I have not spoke with Representative Howe, so.
Representative Howe.
Well, his comment. I guess my question, Madam Chair, my question would be is this bill not, isn't there a similar bill like this moving through on its own?
Representative Falk.
Madam Chair, Representative Howe, I believe there is. I'm not certain exactly what Representative Bly's course is, but as I learned from Representative Phyllis Kahn, that it's good to have important pieces of policy moving in multiple places.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed the total added verbiage in the actual bill is less than two lines, with the exception of the effective date. And the amendment is many times that. So, frankly, I think that there might be a place for the amendment to be placed, but I don't think the trunk on this vehicle is large enough, and so I'd suggest maybe not including it.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess before I have any comments, sometimes members offer amendments because they want to just remind people about the importance of a subject and withdraw the amendment. And I don't want to go into a long discussion here if that's what the author of the amendment is going to be doing. So I'll kind of just defer to him if you're doing this for the purpose of conversation or if you're actually trying to tack it on.
Representative
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, no, I believe fully in the merits of this and actually believe it should be included in this conversation.
Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. It's just very unusual that two members of the majority party who have total control over state government are trying to, they can't get their bill to move forward, so they're tacking it on as an amendment to a first-term member from the minority party's ability. I mean, so Representative Hall, first of all, congratulations on your newfound recognition to move legislation forward in the process as a first-term minority member when we've got two veteran majority party members who are seemingly unable or unwilling to get the attention of committee chairs to move a bill forward. I would oppose the amendment. I would think we'd want to show deference to the author of the amendment, but if it's the will of the committee to do it, that would be highly unusual that the the majority party would take this bill off the general register and schedule it on the House floor with that provision in it when there's other vehicles available for it.
Oh, Representative Garofalo, if the amendment goes on, we would have to amend our motion and send this to government operations because I can't imagine that Representative Nelson wouldn't want to see this legislation.
I think that's a fair point. And maybe that's another unintended or intended effect of the motion.
Any further discussion on the Falk Amendment? All those in favor of the Falk Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion seems to prevail.
I'll request the division, Madam Chair.
Division having been requested, all those in favor, please raise your hand. And all those opposed, please raise your hand. Somebody tell me what the numbers are. And the vote the motion prevails on a vote of 8-5, the amendment is adopted. Representative Garofalo.
So the effect now is that we've taken not one bill but two bills and sent them to government ops that have the same provision attached to it. So
Representative Garofalo, I think your question is for Representative Falk.
I'm asking if that's the question, though, is that we now have a bill that is stuck in government operations and can't move forward. We now have two bills in government operations that can't move forward.
Representative Garofalo, I think that's what's happening. Representative Falk.
Madam Chair and to Representative Garofalo, I try to respect people's, prerogatives, and I don't try to impugn motives around here. I do not know the status of Representative Bly's bill with respect to Representative Nelson's committee. That would be an appropriate conversation to have with those two parties. I'm not going to impugn motives on either one of them, but that would be the intent that this would end up going to there as well.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And then it's a question for Representative Falk. So we have a bill in the Government Operations Committee right now that, for whatever reason, not questioning anyone's motives, but Representative Bly is not able to move that bill forward.
Better help.
But well, the bill's not moving forward right now. That's why we that's why people attach provisions to other vehicles, is because that that bill is not moving forward. So now we have two bills with identical language in the same committee. Can you just explain to the members of the committee why this bill would have a better chance or a different chance of moving through that committee versus the other?
Representative Falk.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I'm not speaking to the merits of either of these as to whether or not the author or the chair of the committee wants either of them. And I don't know what Chair Nelson's prerogatives are, so I'm not going to speak to that. I don't know if he had a conversation with Representative Bly. But I'm not disagreeing with the merits of this bill, treating people fairly. But I think when we have these conversations, this is an appropriate conversation to be had with it. So looking at the policy aspects here, I feel very comfortable with this bill as amended and believe it should be consulted and considered in conjunction with the By the Farm provisions. That's my personal reason for why I offered it.
And Madam Chair and
Representative Garofalo.
Representative Polk, that's why I asked up front if there was the purpose of this was to develop a conversation on the issue and not just to attach it to the bill. But it's your prerogative. You guys are in charge. You got total control. You can do that. I just strategically, I don't understand the value of what the committee just did. I don't understand how it advances the goal of moving legislation forward. I don't get it. You have the power to do that. No one on this side of the aisle can stop it. But I got to tell you, this is my ninth year here. I've never seen anybody tack an amendment onto the minority party's bill. The majority party has that bill stuck in a committee and then send the exact same bill or that provision to the exact same committee. I don't get it, but maybe offline, I have something to learn from Representative Falk. I'm open to new ideas, but I'll just tell you, I don't get it.
Representative Garofalo, I think maybe you haven't been paying attention, though, because I think I've seen everything attached as an amendment to every kind of bill. The idea is when the ship's going down, everybody's jumping on lifeboats, and I don't have any opinion about, and I'm not going to comment on Representative Falk's motivations, but I've seen people add, there's no germaneness rules in committee. So I have seen a fair amount of creative amending in committee to keep provisions alive that would otherwise maybe be having trouble. And I don't think this is that unusual.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo,
what is extremely unusual about it is usually it's the minority party that's doing it. But I accept your analogy that the DFL is a sinking ship and the Republican Party is a lifeboat. So I appreciate that recognition. But again, I'm just to this point, Madam Chair, I understand that people attach amendments to bills that are moving forward in the process. That's not what's unusual. What's unusual about this is we have the majority party attaching amendments to a minority party's bill and referring the bill to the exact same committee where the majority party's bill was present. That is what is incredibly unusual. Again, you guys are in charge. You guys can do what you want. I don't understand how Representative Howe is going to have more impact in the legislative process as a minority member than two veteran DFL majority members, but that's okay. We can end the conversation and go on. It's just very bizarre, but I appreciate you giving me that slow softball for an analogy that works out good.
Madam Chair.
Representative Falk.
I do have to respond to one thing. I mean, maybe this is perhaps is a difference in how we approach the institution of the legislature between myself and some of the other members of the committee, but for some of us, politics stops when the campaign ends and we actually focus on policy. And this is about policy, and this is an appropriate discussion to be have about when you're out these lines and whether or not people should be fairly treated and compensated for when their land is going to be taken. The two go hand in hand. So, yes, this is about policy. It's not about politics. Now, you can impugn all the political motives you want, Representative Garofalo, but I do think that we can rise above that and actually talk about the substantive policy aspects of things, and that's what we should be doing.
Madam Chair.
And Representative Garofalo, I'll just let you know when I noticed this bill for a hearing, I did not anticipate this amendment.
I don't think you did, Madam Chair, so don't. And again, to my friend, Representative Falk, that's why the first thing I did up front is I asked if this was done to develop a conversation. That's the very first thing I asked. I understand that many times I have offered amendments to both majority and minority parties' bills to develop, have a conversation, to raise member awareness about how important the issue is to me. That's the first thing I asked. I'm not questioning anyone's motives. If you guys want to kill legislation, you're in the majority. You don't hear the bill. You don't vote in favor of it. You don't You don't have to tack an amendment onto a bill to kill it. I'm not questioning anyone's motives at all. I just think it's highly bizarre and incredibly ineffective. I mean, if you want to move your legislation forward, there are better avenues for it than tacking it on to Representative Howe's bill. I just think it's really strange. But,
right, I think you've had a thorough discussion on the politics. Does anybody else have questions or comments on the substance of the bill or the bill as amended? Representative Quam.
Yes, thank you. Bring us back to the actual original bill content and not talking about what was amended to it. What is the real effect on this? It's just to make sure that all the route options are visible through the process. If you can expound, maybe the staff could expound of what this adds in reality, and if there are any unintended consequences, because it seems fairly straightforward approach. I just want to understand the fuller scope of it.
Is that a question for the author? I mean, I don't know if it's a question that's more properly addressed to the author, but Mr. Aleph, if you had a comment.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, I really think the author did a good job of explaining what the meaning of the bill is. I really don't have anything to add to it.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It basically just puts all the people in those proposed routes on the same playing field. So they all get the same notice, and they're all active in the process. So it's just an incentive to keep them active in the process instead of having some on the preferred route that do get active and those on the alternate route show apathy and don't get involved.
Representative Quam.
So in the way without this becoming law, so the alternate route people aren't informed, or they are informed to a lesser extent. I'm aware of us earlier in the year hearing about what CapEx 2020 and that of where the judge ruled for one route, and then the board decided to go for the other route. During that whole process, did it switch who they were informing, or standard present processes to inform everyone to the same degree?
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The way that happens right now is though you get notified, everybody gets notified, but you get notified that this is the preferred route, this is the alternate route. And as my constituent emailed me, he says the preferred route had a huge amount of opposition. Town hall meetings, lawyers, fundraising, signings, etc. The route finally picked had one testifier, him and his wife. They made 100 brochures, hand-delivered them, talked to folks up and down the line, at which time that option was E-F. These folks said that line will never come through here. It's going north along the freeway. How wrong it turned out to be. So what it did was, because they weren't on the preferred route, they assumed that it wasn't coming that direction. So all this does is it takes out that preferred route, so no one knows where it's going to go, and everyone's concerned where it goes. It's everybody gets the same notice. It's just that the lines don't have this route isn't preferred. They're just alternate routes.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Howe. It sounds like a good common sense thing, so that, I like this intent and idea. I mean, it doesn't allow for something that had no real focus on it to all of a sudden become the final route. So frankly, I don't see anything wrong with this, and I really would hope that it would get due consideration without having a trunk full of something that I don't think is quite as germane, even though we don't have the restrictions on it. But, I hope that you still get to do it as the chief author, even though the majority of the bill as amended now is someone else's bill. So I'm all for the original intent without the smoke screen.
Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. excuse me. I also agree that considering the kind of testimony we had yesterday, there was a number of people who were along a preferred route and signs being carried and whatnot, and we didn't hear a word from people on any of the alternate routes. I think that's a good example of what the intent of Representative Howe's bill is. Thank you.
All right, any further discussion? Seeing none, I would amend my motion, and I would move that Representative Beard.
Are you going to ask if anybody in the audience wants to speak to
you? Oh, sure. I thought I already did that, but I'll do it again, or for the first time. Would anybody in the audience like to speak for or against the bill, either the amendment or the bill, underlying bill?
Thank you.
Seeing none, I amend my motion and would move that House File 655, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill will go on to government operations, and Representative Howe will learn about negotiations with the chair of a committee and the other members. So good luck to you, Representative Howe.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And then Representative Howe, before you go, just, you know, perhaps you can clean that up in conference committee when it's there. So,
Representative Morgan, have you read the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move adoption of the minutes. We have 3 days worth of the minutes here.
One at a time.
I'll move adoption of the minutes from March 12th.
Representative Morgan moves adoption of the minutes from March 12th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I will move adoption of the minutes from March 13.
All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Morgan.
I will move the minutes, Madam Chair, adoption of the minutes from March 18.
All those in favor of the Morgan motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. The minutes of March 18th are adopted. Members, we are adjourned.